handle the truth.
May 25th, 1:25 p.m. William Truth Taylor was born, my friend. I hopped.
Hey, hey, that's right. It's hump day. Welcome to the show. It's Ray and Tay today. And spend an hour with us and let us help you get over the hump. I'm Ray. That's Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. And yes, 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 another good day of life, sports, and all that good stuff. And the beats, the music, too. So join us, Ray and Tay, today. It's 718-664-9098. And, you know, we got a special guest joining us today. Ray will tell you about the show. I have to tell you about our guest, my boy Ricky Rivers, Ricky Funsport Rivers, who's a co-host of Hard to Guard Radio. He's got the Funsport Fireball and youth basketball. So he'll be joining us, a big Brooklyn fan, and talking about the Nets and talking about his junior pros program. And their championship is coming up this weekend at the Barclay Center. So we'll talk some big stuff with Ricky at later on in the show. So, Ray, why don't you let us know, man, what else are we jumping off with?
Yeah, well, we're going to go through some breaking news. Not a lot going on in the sports world, but we'll bring it to you. We'll quickly review that Monday Night Football quote-unquote NFL game between the Jets and the Titans.
I don't think they're worth our saliva.
Yeah, that's true. But we still have to go through it. Let's just get it out of our system. And then we'll tell you Ray and Tay are in the fantasy finals. So real ball on CBS Sports. So we'll talk a little bit about our upcoming battle for supremacy and also
for the chip and also general
advice and some thoughts around fantasy this weekend for all of you playing in your finals and your championships. Then we'll move on to where you're at. We got a segment for you I think you'll like. We actually had a request from Meech, one of our, you know, longtime friends and homies. They went to school with him. And he said, hey, why don't you guys profile this ex-Syracuse Orangeman and played in the NBA. So we'll get into that towards the middle of the show. And then, like Tay said, we got a special caller, Ricky Rivers. He's a co-host of Hard to Guard Radio. He's the CEO of Fun Sport, and he's definitely involved in youth basketball. He coaches high school. He runs tournaments. He'll tell you all about it. So good, exciting stuff. So, Tay, why don't you kick us off? Any big breaking news there?
Well, it's kind of wild. The Detroit Lions are just losing their whole team. Nick Fairley is on the IR for the rest of the season. He's done. So their defensive tackle. This was surprising. Kawhi Leonard, who started for the Spurs last year, a lot of games, and, you know, like one of their star players, he was assigned to the D-League. That's surprising. You know, players that normally go to the D-League are not guys like in the 7-8-man rotation. So
and he was
surprised.
In the rotation. That is surprising.
Yeah,
that
kind of
got healthy, but still, he's a starter.
Yeah, that surprised me. You know, RG3 practice today. You know, it's formality. He's probably going to start. DeMarco Murray didn't practice. They're just resting his foot. He'll probably play. Charles Woodson did not practice, probably will not play. So just, you know, a couple notes, you know, and stuff like that here and there. And the Bulls, weirdly enough, there's some rumors talking about the Bulls might possibly release Nate Robinson and look to trade Richard Hamilton, but I'll be surprised if that goes down.
I can't see that happening, especially without Derrick Rose coming back. So who's your backcourt? Kirk Hiring? He's going to play the one and the two together?
And our boy for tonight's battle, Brooklyn versus New York, Melo is a game-time decision.
So, man, my Melo, get on the court.
Get on the mic.
You know you
need Jello.
Well, another piece of news is Notre Dame's Brian Kelly wins the AP Coach of the Year. How could you not give it to him? 12-0, undefeated. I do think they'll get spanked up in this championship, in this BCS championship game by Alabama, but we'll get into that in a couple weeks. But kudos to him, AP Coach of the Year. He deserved it.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know what else I was surprised about? My coach, Gary Anderson from Utah State University,
USU,
is about to be announced the new head coach of Wisconsin.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, did you see his record? He's something like 26 and 24 in 4 years at Utah State, the Aggies, for all of you who don't know.
They had some big wins this year, though.
But exactly. But he went 11 and 2 this year. So
yeah,
it's all about how you finish. So good for him. He got the upgrade. He goes from Utah State to Wisconsin. That's a big, big upgrade. That's a legit program.
Yeah, that's huge. That is really huge. And of course, we have to give a shout out to Boeheim. You know, he got his 900th win, so that was definitely big. And we'll connect that dot later on in our show with our Where You At. So listen, let's get into it, man. Let's just talk about the Jets real quick, and then we'll talk about Ray and Tay and fantasy. All I can say is I'm glad that it's over. There's no more hope or glimmer that they can make the playoffs. Tennessee beat them. It was 14-10, the most disgusting game you could really ever watch. 14 penalties for the Titans, 5 turnovers for the Jets, 4 interceptions and a fumble by Sanchez.
Three turnovers in the fourth quarter. The craziest thing
is
the Jets
throwing
the
Griffin.
The Jets could have won the game as terribly as they played. Sanchez was 13 for 28 for 131, and the Jets could have won the game. They had the ball back and over 30 yards to win the game. I'm choking on my own words.
It was scary. Even Tirico and Gruden and Young and Dilfer, everybody ripped the Jets.
Well, you know what? And I was going to say kudos to ESPN for really not holding back, because this was horrible.
And being honest.
Now, granted, ESPN gets screwed a little bit because they don't get the best games on Monday night. So Dick Ebersol, and when he did that contract with NBC and covering the Sunday night game for, I think it was $800 million a year, they got, especially the last 4 weeks, they got to flex the teams, and they got the first pick of the hat. So the Sunday night games are almost always great. And the Monday night games are, they can be pretty bad. So kudos to ESPN for not sugarcoating the fact that this game was terrible. And Trent Dilfer went on a rant. Steve Young sort of ranted. And even, you know, Tirico and Gruden during the game and Stuart Scott after the game, they just basically called it like they saw it, which was great. It was very, very gratifying to see that they didn't try to spin this into something that was, this work of art when it was actually terrible, terrible football.
Yeah, well, you can't lie to the audience. We're watching the game, too, and now.
Yeah, but you cannot say something, right?
No, I know. But
you don't need to lie. You could just.
They're real guys, though. You know what I mean? I think they're real guys. You got an ex-coach and 2 ex-players, so they're gonna keep it real. But now Sanchez is benched, thank goodness. They overskipped Tebow, and also it's reported Tebow is going to ask out whether he gets released or traded. And now McElroy, the ex-Roll Tide Bama quarterback who won a chip.
National champion.
Yeah, McElroy will get a start. And he won that Cardinal game 7-6. So we'll see what he can do. Good for him. You know.
Yeah, so we got an email here regarding this topic, so it's pretty apropos. So Brian from New York City writes, if you could change something about the Jets, what would it be and in what order? So he's asking the GM, the head coach, and the quarterback. So I'll put that out there for you, Tay. If you could change them, basically what order would you change? What's most important, what's second most important, and what's third?
Yeah, be like Brian, all of them, right? But not for me, honestly, I'd get rid of Tannenbaum. I would eat that contract because, you know what, who cares? It's $8-9 million. I just don't care anymore. He can't be successful in New York. I'd get rid of Sanchez, and I'd keep Rex Ryan.
Okay.
But I'd bring in a North Turner or a real offensive guy and, let him really be the OC and assistant head coach and run the offense, and we'd be rolling. You know,
and
I don't know if the quarterback's on my team.
You'd get rid of Sanchez.
I don't know if I go get an Alex Smith or a Vic or a Flynn, but it's not, you know, maybe a Kirk Cousins, but I'm definitely not rolling Matt Moore, but I'm not rolling with Mark Sanchez.
You know, the number against the cap is $17.1 million if you get rid of Sanchez. All of that is against the cap in 2013. And if you hold him, then you at least get a backup. So that's the only reason why you would keep Sanchez, because that's a big number, $17 million against the cap.
Yeah, well, maybe he's my backup, but he's definitely not starting.
Yeah, I hear that. I think ultimately there's two decisions. Number one is, who is out there to be your head of football operations? Because obviously that can't be Mike Tannenbaum. Supposedly he's good with numbers and cap and contracts and that sort of thing. But you need a new head of football operations for sure. And then the question is, if you're going to keep Rex, you need to have somebody at least as, you know, knowledgeable as he is on the defensive end, on the offensive end, and somebody that's got some presence and can kind of stand up to Rex and say, look, I've got the offense, you've got the defense, and, you know, you'll be the ultimate decision maker, but leave me the offense. So that GM's got a tough job too, right? That GM's got to go potentially take a $17 million cap hit this year, doesn't have a quarterback, doesn't really have a star anywhere on offense, and has to deal with a coach potentially that needs to be kind of moved aside a little bit, and a big offensive, you know, talent needs to be brought in. So that's not a fun GM job. But I think the key is the GM. You know, ultimately the key is the GM, because the personnel just isn't there to compete and
yeah,
be effective.
I thank Brian, man, for emailing us. But you know what? Let's talk about our fantasy football championship. Who cares about the Jets? They're bums. Come on, man. Now, look, Ray and Tay, we've been in this league for I don't know how many years we've been doing it, but we've never been in the championship game together.
Yeah.
So I won it 2 years ago, I believe. But
the best I did was I lost in the finals. So now
right,
we're both in the finals. Ooh, so CBS Sportsline has me as a slight favorite. 150 to 146, unless you make some moves.
Well, look, this is the deal. I got Cutler at quarterback. I could go with Russell Wilson. My running backs are AP and Moreno. My receivers are Victor Cruz, Pierre Garçon, and my flex receiver, Stevie Johnson. I decided to put Lance Moore on the bench since he's going up against the Cowboys. My tight end is Dallas Clark. My kicker, who got me nothing last week because of the shutout, Lawrence Tynes from the Giants, and I'm rocking the Seahawks defense. And I might pick up a defense. We'll see what I'll do. I guess for me, the only dilemma is, should I do Russell Wilson? Should I maybe play a Steven Jackson or Ben Jarvis Green Ellis? And, you know,
you made the decision already on Lance Moore.
I don't think I'm going to go with Lance Moore, but, you know, we'll see. I'll throw it out there to the audience. Maybe some people will give me some advice at Ray and Tay today at Twitter or at Facebook, but we'll see. That's how it's looking right now.
Well, my dilemma is no dilemma, because I have no bench. I've always known that I've had no bench ever since Maurice Jones-Drew went down and Joe Flacco stunk it up and Emmanuel Sanders never really stepped in to be the player that he was supposed to be, and Ronnie Hillman got his backup job basically taken by Noshawn Moreno. So I have no bench.
He's on my team.
Yeah. So no bench for me. I pretty much have to go with my starters and go with the guys that I rolled with and a guy I traded for. And so to me, I just have to go with what I got. So right now it's Peyton Manning at quarterback, Darren Sproles, and Marshawn Lynch at running back. And my wide receivers, who have underachieved the last two games. I mean, they've been great. They were great in weeks 1 to 13, but now they've slowed down a little bit. But that was the strength of my team for many weeks in the middle of the season, was A.J. Green, who's going up against Pittsburgh, and Marshawn Lynch, by the way, is going up against San Francisco, so that's a tough matchup.
Mm-hmm.
A.J. Green going against Pittsburgh, and I got Reggie Wayne. And then my tight end right now is Jermaine Gresham. And my flex, also going up against Pittsburgh, my flex is Jimmy Graham. I could always slide him into tight end and then use somebody else on the flex.
Right, going up against Dallas.
Yeah, and then my kicker is Jason Hanson against Atlanta. And the one break I get is Chicago, who hasn't been playing well defensively. They're my defense last 3 weeks, but they go up against Arizona. Now, is this the Arizona team that won 4 in a row, or is this the Arizona team that lost 9 in a row, or is this the Arizona team from last week that actually looked decent? So hopefully my Bears can get...
Right, but their offense wasn't that good.
Yeah, that's true.
So you got to go with the Bears defense. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. We're going to have some fun. We're going to have a good battle. And I guess neither one of us have anybody playing Monday night. There's no Monday night game because the Monday night game is now Christmas Eve. So it's going to be Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday. Yeah, I have I have my kicker, Jason Hanson, going.
Right, Detroit, Atlanta. So we will know Sunday night. So on the Monday show, we will.
And I have somebody actually in the late game. So it'll be probably up to Marshawn Lynch for me because he's playing Sunday at 8:20. And I think looking up and down your roster, you're
done. I got the Seahawks defense.
The early games.
But I might roll with Russell Wilson.
Defense.
I might not do Jay Cutler. I don't know if I can trust
Jay
Cutler.
So Sunday night, that game is going to determine it, especially if you play Russell Wilson. If you play Russell Wilson and the Seahawks D, and I have Marshawn Lynch, ooh, that game's going to be important. Okay.
I don't know if I trust Jay Cutler, man. I got to be honest. So listen,
Arizona, though? Well, Arizona's been good all year, I suppose.
You know, think about it. The Bears' offense has just been inept, and they've got a great defense. Arizona's defense is solid. And it's at Arizona. The Bears' offense, besides Forte, it's just been a complete, hot mess.
This is a lot of respect, though. CBS Sports projects Jay Cutler to have 16, and to have Russell Wilson against the Niners' D, they project him to get 20.
Yeah,
so
and it was 18
CBS,
the other
tell
day.
You to play Russell Wilson.
Yeah, no, it was 18 the other day. It went up to 20.
He probably had his Wheaties this morning.
That's
maybe taking a 5-hour energy before the game. He's ready. Okay. All right. Well, Sunday night. It's on. Seattle, San Fran. That's a great game too, football wise. Forgetting about fantasy. That'll be a fun game to watch to see if the Seattle Seahawks are for real and they can play on the road. They back to back 50-point games. And let's see that game in the division. I mean, obviously Seattle's going to be in the playoffs, but let's see that game. Maybe they can give the Niners a run for their money and say, look, we're here to stay. And of course, the two coaches have that little thing going on since their Pac-12 days where, you know, Harbaugh was saying to recruits how he thinks that, the coach from USC, Pete Carroll, is not long for college, and he's on his way to the NFL. So he's trying to sabotage his recruits and get them at Stanford. So they have a little animus between those two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they definitely do. So what did you think about last night? Gasol came back. They barely beat the Bobcats.
Barely.
They lost, what, 11 in a row?
They were down 18 in the third quarter, and they outscored them by, I think it was 39-20 from the middle of the third through the end of the game. Oh, and by the way, Gerald Henderson and a couple other of the Bobcats missed shots to win the game. So they could have won the game. Kemba lit them up for 28 points. I tell you what, the Lakers.
Kemba's nice. I try to tell you.
Yeah, I told you Bobcats have nothing, and you tell me Kemba's nice. And I got to give credit to Kemba. He might be the most improved player in the NBA. But this team shouldn't be giving the Lakers as much trouble as they are.
Well, you know what's so funny? I just think they don't use Gasol properly. Even last night, it wasn't really fluid. And I think it's D'Antoni. I just don't think he knows how to coach two big men. And he knows how to do spacing and this and that, and maybe it will just work once Nash is there. But, you know, it's not working with D'Antoni. You know, it just isn't.
What do you do? Are you willing to fire him in the middle of the season? Or do you just wait it out? And because Kobe's clock
no,
is ticking. And Dwight Howard,
I don't think
to
they're
going to
fire D'Antoni. I don't know if they're willing to admit that they made another mistake. So I don't think they'll fire D'Antoni. I think, unfortunately, they might make a bigger mistake and trade Gasol.
Well, everybody's pushing them to do something, starting with Magic Johnson and obviously everybody in the media, because they just want to shake this thing up.
I think you got to give them a fair shake. Let's see what happens when Nash comes back and they're healthy. If I was them, though, they were looking at Michael Redd, Delonte West, Rajah Bell. I would sign somebody. One of those guys is quality to help
Jody
out. And they're talking about they were talking about moving Kobe to the three. What would you do? Would you move him to the small forward? Bring Ron off the bench?
Sure. If Kobe, because look, you have Devin Ebanks and Meta World, a.k.a. Ron Artest, at your three. So except for defense where they're both, you know, they're different. Ebanks is kind of long and lanky, and Artest is probably not half the defender he used to be, but at least he's tough. You know, that's one of the issues is defense, right? So you move Kobe to the three. Depends on who you add at the two, right? But sure, shake it up a little bit. Why not? If you can get some spacing and some shooting and maybe even some defense at the two, although that's hard to get, the same guy that can shoot and defend, you know, Rajah Bell comes to mind, you know.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be ironic if they got Rajah Bell? Remember that playoff series? No, it wasn't the playoff series. During the regular season when Rajah Bell was with the Suns, I think it was, and they got tangled up and then they got a couple technical fouls. And
oh, him and Kobe.
After the game, yeah. And they were like, you know, what did you think about Rajah Bell getting under your skin or whatever? He's like, oh, I don't even know that guy. Like, who is that guy? Kobe.
He's so arrogant.
You know Kobe knows every single player in the NBA. And Kobe was like, I don't know that guy. Who's that guy? I don't even know him. And I'm like, come on. It's not a guy on a 10-day contract from, you know, from the NBA.
From Istanbul.
This is Rajah Bell. He's a pro player.
Oh, man.
Kobe's like, I don't know that kid.
It's a mess. Well, listen, we might not have Melo tonight, but I am interested to see if they could win at home without him. I think it would be hard against Brooklyn. You know, 18-6 going up against, you know, 13-11 now. Wow, they've lost a lot.
They lost 9 of the last 11. They started out.
Yeah. Well, Lopez is back now, though.
Lopez is back.
So.
I like this Nets team, man. I think they're going to win. I think they're going to win, especially if the Knicks don't have Carmelo. I think they just have too much size because the Knicks also are banged up, right? You're not even getting full minutes out of Kurt Thomas, and Rasheed Wallace is banged up. And so.
Yeah, I don't know if Rasheed's going to play either.
Yeah. And so Tyson is the lone warrior up front. So he's got to go up against Evans and Humphries and Lopez and Wallace. So they
no,
Knicks
not
have
easy.
Size issues.
Kermit the Frog here. It is not easy being green. Yeah. Yo, you know what I liked last night, though? That Utah Jazz team, they kind of took it to Brooklyn and BK. Al Jefferson was like 16-11, and they played tough. And again, like I told you, with that ankle with D. Will, he couldn't hit the big shot. I don't know, man. You feeling this Utah team or what?
Look, I think they're a solid team. I think that, you know, the Marvin Williams trade, they wanted to just shake things up a little bit. But ultimately, look, they're a 7th, 8th, 9th team in the East. I mean, look, Al Jefferson probably will never get
the
credit for being as good as he is. And another, they might have two of the most underrated players in the league between Al Jefferson and Paul Millsap. You know, These guys are really underrated, and they go under the radar screen. The disappointment for me, not because I drafted him in two of my NBA fantasy teams,
yes, it is.
But Derek Favors, you know, this is his time to shine, right? He came out as a rookie from Georgia Tech. He was really
Everybody
raw.
Says that, but why does it have to be true?
Well, it's true that he's a crazy athlete. That's true. The problem is his game has never caught up to his athleticism. So he's just an athletic 6'10 guy who we're hoping develops into – it's like Bam Bam, right? Like he grows into his man body and his man basketball game grows into his athleticism. But so far, not so much, right? Randy Foy was a pleasant surprise for them, you know, especially his shooting and his scoring. Gordon Hayward from Butler has been, doing his thing. He's averaging 15 a game. And the guy you disrespected in our preview show, Mo Williams, he's doing his thing. He's 16.
No,
and
he
seven.
Did okay last night. I gotta give
he's
him a little props. He was
just the game.
He was aggressive and he was playing some ball. Put it like this, I still, in a seven-game series in the first round, I'm not going to like Mo Williams matched up against any other point guard out there in the West, even if it's like, you know, they probably wouldn't play Stephen Curry in Golden State, but I just don't like, I don't like him matched up. Mo is, I'm not feeling Mo.
Well,
you know what I think is interesting?
13.5 and 7 assists is, you know, he's doing his thing.
Yeah.
He's not a star. I'm just saying he's good enough. He's an NBA starter. He's a solid point guard in the NBA. Now, again, we're saying Utah is a 7, 8, 9 seed in the West. We're not saying they're going anywhere. We're not even saying they're winning a first-round matchup. But they're a solid team. They're just solid up and down, and they have those two studs up front in Jefferson and Millsap who just continue to be underrated.
Yeah. Well, did you think that obviously the, you know, after Monday night and Linsanity and the Knicks lost to the Rockets who are 12-12, and they play Philly tonight. Did you think that the Rockets would be 12-12? I mean, at this point, and this is with, you know, their coach missing for a while with his, you know, tragedy, and they've got the starting five. Everybody's in double figures, 10, 13, 15, 25, and 11 for their team.
No
from
way.
The Sheik.
I thought the Rockets were terrible. And I thought that
this is pretty impressive.
Very impressive. Very impressive to Daryl Morey and to that whole organization, including Kevin McHale. So Harden, I didn't think he would. What they're getting out of Lynn is exactly what I thought. So Lynn, you know, that's even, right? They're getting much more out of Harden than I thought he could do. I thought if he was the number one option, I didn't think he'd score 25 a game. And I think those numbers will come down a little bit, but still Harden is proving he's like, I'm worth a max contract. But here's the thing, that the people that I didn't expect anything from are the other three starters, right? Omer Asik, I thought he's just a defensive, you know, role player. Maybe he'll grab 8 or 9 rebounds, but he's scoring 10 a game and is in, you know, top 2 or 3 in the league in rebounds. So
yeah,
he's doing his thing. Patrick Patterson from Kentucky is developing
a
little game. And Chandler Parsons, he had a great second half last year, but I thought, you know what, you score on a bad team, it's easy to put up offensive numbers on a bad team. But it's working.
Second leading scorer on that team, 15 a game.
Yep, they're 12-12. They're a good team. I tell you what, you know who else is 12-12 but is in trouble, and I want to hear what you think about these guys, the Boston Celtics.
They are in trouble, right?
They're also 12-12.
Yeah, they're in trouble, but I think they'll be fine, the veterans, and come the playoffs. What I do think their issue is, though, I don't think, you know, people think they'll do what they did last year, where the playoffs they'll be fine and this and that. I don't think it's the same team, and it's not just because of Ray. I think they'd have too many 1-2s and 2-3s. And, you know, 3-4s, they don't have any real size. And even Sullinger is doing a lot for them. Sullinger is too small.
Yes, Sullinger's too small. Jeff Green is too small. They need some size. They have Kevin Garnett, who was never even – I mean, he got rebounds, but he never was a defensive, you know, a size guy. at the four, and now they have him playing the five. Now, luckily,
and Wilcox is kind of soft.
Yeah, so they've got
at least
some issues up front. They've got some issues up front. They need to bring in, you know, like a Jermaine O'Neal from a few years ago. At least gave them some size, some shot blocking. They need help up front.
You know, I got to laugh, right? I'm just looking at. I got to give a shout out to the Phoenix Suns because they're playing some ball, and they play the Bobcats tonight. But do you realize we talk about Kemba, right? The Bobcats. Kemba is rocking 18.5 a game, right?
He is.
I need to apologize. He's doing hip hop.
You know, the pride of Rice High School. Kemba is doing his thing. I can't say anything but kudos to Kemba, right? This was the same progression he made at Connecticut when it was, you know, A.J. Price was running the point. And kudos to him for making an impact and being in the league and doing his thing in Indiana. But Kemba Walker is averaging 18.5 points, 6.1 assists, and 3.2 rebounds per game. They list him at 6'1". Kemba Walker is like 5'10". So Kemba is doing his thing. Good for him. I poo-pooed him, and I said he's too small. And I hated when they drafted him, especially when they had DJ Augustine also on that team. I'm like, well, what is this, the all-under-6-feet league? So good for him.
Well, they did trade him to the Pacers, so.
They did. But they drafted onto a team, I'm saying last year, onto a team that had DJ Augustine. They drafted Kemba Walker. And even Gerald Henderson, who's their best player, is kind of undersized at 6'4", 6'5". Now, we remember his father. But Gerald Henderson he's undersized, so again, that Charlotte team to me lacks talent, but it's not Kemba's fault. Kemba certainly
no, definitely not. But this
work.
Phoenix team, right? The whole starting five is in double figures. Dragic at four, you know, almost 15 a game,
and
Brown
he's
at 12.
Too.
No, good. Brown at 12, Dudley at 10, Sciola at 12, and Gortat at 11. That's a nice, solid starting five. You know, I think. You need a little bit more. You know, I guess what they've decided to do is bring Beasley off the bench now and be the sixth man, you know, and because I think he can score more, right? Beasley, he'll probably, you know, he's averaging, I don't know, maybe 16, 17 a game. So he can come in and do something off the bench, which is kind of the best role for him. Do you think that Derek, this is the thing, I was watching Minnesota-Miami last night.
Yeah,
Minnesota was playing ball.
Beasley is 10.9, so almost 11 points per game, and only 3.8 rebounds a game. Beasley,
That's the issue.
Yeah, but he could rebound in college. He was the man at K-State. I mean, he only played that one year, but, you know, he led the conference in rebounds. Well, so did Kevin Durant at Texas the year before, but Michael Beasley can rebound. That just means he's just mentally checked
it's
out.
It's just focus in the NBA if you want to go get it, because my man Kevin Love goes and gets it. And last night, Kirilenko, Love, and Petkovic, they were dominating the glass on the Heat, and they were really playing great with them, and then the Heat just were too much, you know, too much athleticism just took over and won the game. But when you watch that Heat team play, the way that they can really be hurt on the boards, I think that's where the Knicks can get them, because the Knicks have issues rebounding as well, but maybe when Amari and then you got Rasheed and Chandler and everybody's healthy, I think maybe that's where the Heat are a little bit weaker.
Well, that's where I said, you know, and I predicted the Celtics to take advantage of the Heat, but, you know, who knew that the Celtics would the age Father Time, you know, was on fast forward, and he caught up to them all at once. But a team that's got size, the problem with the Knicks' size is the Knicks' size can't really punish them in the sense that they don't get in there, draw fouls, offensive rebounds, and score, right? It's more defensive size, the Knicks. So Kurt Thomas at this point in his career is more of a defensive player. Rasheed Wallace never really was the offensive low post player. He's more of a shooter. He likes to migrate out, sometimes even to the three-point line. But a team that can beat the Heat is a team that can beat them up front and pound them into submission on the offensive glass and also score. So Joel Anthony can block a shot or two, but Joel Anthony and Chris Bosh and Udonis Haslem, they're just not big enough. And they're going to have to play LeBron a lot at the four. just like Carmelo has to play the four for the Knicks. So if you can just outsize them and you can put, you know, some cat 6'10", 6'11", 7-footers against the Heat, you can give them some major, major problems. And if you get Chris Bosh in foul trouble, then they're really in trouble, because then you could potentially have to go with, you know, Anthony and Haslam together in the front court. So the issue, though, is what team has that formula or that talent, right? I don't know that a lot of people have that talent, multiple big men. The Lakers do, but – you know, Lakers are far from seeing the Heat in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, listen, this Miami Heat is the perfect segue. Let's take a quick break, and then let's talk about where you at when we look at a former Syracuse and Miami Heat star, Ray and Tay.
A tornado flew around my room before you came. Excuse the mess it made. It usually doesn't rain in Southern California, much like Arizona. My eyes don't shed tears, but boy, they pour when I'm thinking about you. Oh, no, no, no. I've been thinking about you.
All right, all right. We're back. And today is Wednesday, a.k.a. Hump Day. A.K.A. Where You At Wednesday.
Where you at?
So we decided, we got an email. See, we're an interactive show. We got an email from one of our friends and callers, Meech, and he said, you know what? Why don't you profile
Meech
on Where You At, Ronnie Cycling. So
wow.
For those of you who don't remember, and this is apropos, the Heat winning last night and Jim Boeheim winning his 900th victory. So this guy, everybody used to get it wrong. He's not Greek. He's Lebanese. He was born in Lebanon, in Beirut, and then at the age of 9, he moved to Greece, and that's why everybody thought he was Greek. So then he comes to the U.S. and plays at Syracuse, and goes to the national championship game where they lose in 87 to Indiana, and Keith Smart hits that jumper at the end to win that. But that was that team with Derek Coleman and Howard Trish and Sherm Douglas and Greg Monroe and Stevie Thompson from L.A. jumping through the gym. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ronnie Cycli was the starting center on that team. So Cycli,
and they shouldn't
and
have
Derek
lost that
Coleman.
Chip. They shouldn't have lost that championship.
No, that was
no,
crazy.
But that talent.
Steve Alford and Hillman and Keith Smart. No, they Syracuse should have won that. I mean, just think of a front court with Ronnie Cycli and Derek Coleman together. I mean, Cycli ends up being the 9th pick in the draft for the Miami Heat, and we'll get into his pro career. And then Derek Coleman, he was a freshman. So 2 years later after that championship game as a junior, is the number one overall pick by the Nets. So you have two big men who had very, very solid NBA careers on the same college team. Yeah, Syracuse should have won that one.
Well, Jim Boeheim, as not just a great coach, but a great recruiter too.
Yeah, sure.
He built that program.
So Ronnie Cycli gets drafted in 1988. He's the number one pick number 9 overall in the first round, but number one pick for the Miami Heat franchise. So he's their first draft selection. He goes on to play 6 years with the Heat, and then he plays 2 years with the Golden State Warriors, 2 years with the Magic, and then 1 year with the Nets, and then he ends up 1 year in 2000 in Spain with FC Barcelona, better known for their soccer, with Lionel
Barcelona.
Messi signing him till 2018. That was a good move by them. Lock him down, the Argentinian superstar.
Mm-hmm.
So, but back to basketball. So Ronnie Cycli. Now, just to finish out his stats, he actually had a very solid NBA career, scored just shy of 10,000 points, averaged 14.7 points per game, had a little over 6,400 rebounds, so that's 9.5 rebounds per game. That's a very nice career. 11-year NBA
career,
averaging just short of 15 and 9.5 boards. So that's nice. But tell me, all right, so now we got all the dry stuff out of the way. We got the stats.
This is what I thought was kind of interesting.
What you remember about Ronnie Sykes?
Well, his career highs, let's just say in terms of numbers, of, you know, the most he scored was 40 in a game, but he had 34 rebounds in a game, and he also had 8 blocks. And the one thing I was
20 games of 2020, so 20 points and 20-plus rebounds.
Yeah,
so
no, he was impressive. Four steals is the most he had in a game and 6 assists. But the one thing I'll say about Cycli, he was solid. Like in Miami, he sort of, you know, helped build that franchise, and he was around when they had Grant Long, and I think he played a little bit with Steve Smith and some of the other players.
Yeah, he came the following year.
Yeah, you know, and what I liked about Cycli, though, he was a solid go-to guy. I mean, as a center, like you said, he in early years, you know, he was scoring like, you know, 17, 18 a game the early years, and he played really well. And, you know, he was athletic. There wasn't much he could not do. He had decent hands. I think the one thing you kind of remember is when Shaq came in at Orlando, and Shaq was just so overpowering over him, you know, and you see Orlando going up against Miami, and you're like, wow, Shaq would dominate Cycli. But I like Ronnie Cycli's game, man, and to me it was kind of fun because Ronnie was kind of like a little renegade, you know. He was always into fashion and style, and his parents had money, so he didn't have to come out early, and he just was, you know, Ronnie was just a free spirit, you know, but he balled hard, and I give him credit for that. He balled hard, definitely.
Here's my question, though. Where is Ronnie Cycli today? Like, not where he is, but I'm saying his type of player. Because it would seem that the NBA is so lacking on fives. Now, Hank, a regular caller on the show and one of the friends and also in the Ray and Tay Football League, Fantasy Football League, the real ball, he has a theory that when Shaq came in the league, all the would-be fives turned into fours because they didn't want to guard Shaq. So all these cats that may have played center, starting at AAU ball and down, they decided, you know what, we don't want to have to defend Shaq or try to score over Shaq, so let's develop a perimeter game a la Kevin Garnett and Dirk Nowitzki.
Well,
and
it's true, but
Wallace.
Then also the reality is it's not like you're seeing a bunch of power forwards that are 7'1", 7'2". You're just not seeing that many big guys anymore. I mean, if you think about it, besides Shaq, Duncan, you got Gortat. I mean, real, real big guys, you're not seeing. I mean, right now you've got Garnett and Nowitzki, and you've got the Lopez brothers, you know, a couple other guys, but there's not that many big. There's not, you know, Greg Oden was like the last sort of big center, you know, so it's not, you know, they aren't. I don't know where they're at. They're not existing. Maybe taller men, or they're, you know, marrying shorter women, and they're having a lot of. There's a lot of 6'9" guys.
They're
6'9", 6'10"
Hold on
guys.
A second. We got a caller before we bring our guest on. We got a caller. Let's pull him in. Let's see what the caller's got to talk about. Maybe it's NBA. Maybe it's NFL.
Hey
Hello,
guys.
Caller?
This is Mike on the cell. How you doing?
Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, I'd like to put my 2 cents in on this, the Jets situation here, how everything's unfolded here in this season.
All right, what are you thinking?
Well, my first thought is the last resort. They had one last chance in that Titans game. I thought in the last few minutes, if they would have let Tebow come in and did what he did best inside Titans territory, I think, honestly, I think they would have got the win. I think he would have done it, and I think, you know, it would have kept them mathematically alive in the playoffs. What they've done to Tebow and just this whole situation this year, you know, is a complete mess. And not starting him this week, it has to come from the top, from Woody Johnson, in my opinion, because I guarantee you if he would start against San Diego and then I think Buffalo, he would beat them, and it would just make the Jets look so bad. So that's why they're putting in this McElroy or whatever his name is. I just can't see any other scenario why they would put him in over Tebow.
Well, you might be right, Mike, and maybe there's some politics, but I would argue maybe Greg McElroy is just better. especially better at running a conventional NFL offense. And I guess the only thing I will say about that, it's embarrassing to the Titans too, but also embarrassing that the Jets, as terrible as they are, were able to – they almost won that game. And had they won that game, they would have been deceived into thinking that they're a playoff team, and then for two more weeks they would have been, or at least one, they would have been in playoff contention. So it's almost a blessing in disguise that they lost that game. It sounds hard to say as a Jet, you know, somebody likes the NFL and for the Jets and so forth, but for if you're 6-8 and you're out of the playoffs, at least you realize, all right, you got to shake it up. If the Jets had won that game, they'd be 7-7 with an outside chance at making the playoffs. How horrible would that have been?
But they never gave Tebow a chance, and I don't think whether it was the coach or whoever, they never really wanted to, because they never used him the way that they could have or should have. You know what I mean? So it was almost like the deck was stacked against Tebow.
And you know,
that's
one
true.
Thing, guys. The problem I had all year long, last year in Denver, all the magic came in the last 5 minutes of the game. So I thought all season long, you know, in a close game at the end, they should just, you know, say, what the hell, 5 minutes left? Let's put in Tebow, you know, see what he can do. I just saw so many opportunities this year. They could have used them, and they didn't, and it's just a shame. And I hope they're all gone, you know, Tannenbaum, Ryan, because they just it's a complete mess there. You know, Sanchez is $17 million against the cap if they cut him. And, you know, that's about all I got. I'm not a Jets fan, but I'm a Tebow fan, and I'm just basically frustrated he never even got the chance to see what he could do after what he did in Denver last year.
Well, I appreciate the call, Mike. You know, Tebow definitely didn't get a fair shake. Now, you may not think he's an NFL-ready quarterback, especially to run the team for 60 minutes, and that's what I think personally, but I will say he never got a shot in New York. So after the momentum that he built up in Denver and the positive energy that he had and beating Pittsburgh and everything, they needed to give him a chance, and he never got a fair shake in New York. So I hope for Tebow's sake he does get a chance, and he does get a chance to prove himself. So we'll see. We'll see how that works out, and I hope that Tebow gets to move on, because nothing's going to happen for him in New York. So here we go. We're still rolling. It looks like we have some technical issues here with Tay. Hopefully he'll call back in the show. I think we've got a caller. I think this might be Ricky.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricky Rivers.
Hey, Ricky, what's up, man? It's Tal. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Good. No, I appreciate it. Looks like Tay might have a little technical difficulty. I think he dropped, but he's got to call back in. So we gave you a little bit of pub in the beginning. We said that, you know, you've got the CEO of Fun Sport, and you've got Fireball, the tournament going on, and that you're involved in youth basketball. But why don't you tell everybody what you're up to and what Ricky Rivers is all about?
Well, I am the president of Fun Sport, Inc., and I've been running some pretty big youth basketball programs along with pro basketball programs here in New York City. So I've created a niche for myself in this basketball market. We wanted to talk about the one thing I've been really leading the way in is this eighth grade basketball stuff. And, you know, what people may not know is that when you hear seventh and eighth graders, you think of little kids, but these seventh to eighth graders are pretty much studs. And the seventh and eighth grade crop has grown so much that the NCAA has recognized it, and they've declared seventh and eighth graders to be recruitable athletes. So John Calipari can look at a 7th and 8th grader, and they have the same rules as you apply a high school senior. So when they say the NCAA could be involved, they carry the same rules and regulations as a recruitable athlete in the senior year. So these 7th and 8th graders are special, man. I got like 6'10", 6'11", 8th graders coming through my gym. So sometimes when people hear 7th and 8th graders, they dismiss it and think that these are just little kids. But these young men are pretty much men.
Was Damon Bailey the first of those? Because you remember that. You're old enough to remember. Remember on that Sports Illustrated where they had, what was it, Marcus Liberty, and then they had, I think it was Alonzo Mourning. in his grade, and then Marcus Liberty in his grade, and then Kenny Anderson in his grade, and then Damon Bailey, and everybody's like, "Whoa, you got an eighth grader on the cover of Sports Illustrated? That's crazy."
Yeah, he was projected to be big time, and things didn't quite pan out the way you expected for the young man. But these eighth graders, and a lot of them get a lot of star power locally. I mean, I'm one of those guys, I think, that's regionally here that really kind of really promote and push these eighth graders to giving them that local exposure that they need. And as they enter high school, sometimes they come already with that star power entering high school, some deservedly so. You still got to remember that 7th and 8th graders, when you talk about them, you're still talking about potential. But guys like myself and other guys that I know in the business, you're really looking at kids and you're really looking at them, and you got to look down the line. You got to be able to forecast, looking at a guy's skill set, how he's prepared for games, and looking at his physical development to see, can you project this kid to be good in 4 years? I projected Kyle Anderson to be good in 4 years. He's good. I projected Javon Pinkston to be good in 4 years. He's a McDonald's All-American. Omar Calhoun plays at UConn. So a lot of these kids locally, they come through our program. Most of the special ones who turned out to be special have come their way through my middle school program as a start out. Not all. I mean, everybody doesn't make it to the big leagues and to the major sun, to the showtime. But some do, and I'm privileged to be able to see these kids in the early stages of their development before they become stars.
So, Rick, let me ask you, man, who in your championship, obviously you've got the junior pros and you've got the championship coming up Sunday at the Barclays Center. Tell us about that and the matchup, but are any of these kids, do you project any of these kids in this game to, you know, be maybe D1 players?
Yeah, when I look at this game, you got Connecticut Basketball Club. Connecticut Basketball Club is the number 6 team in the country, number 1 in the Northeast, number 1 team in the Northeast. So when you look at their team and you look at the competition, you may see young kids, but I see potential great ones. There's a gentleman named J.C. Martin at the point guard position. He stands around 5'8", but he wears a 13 shoe. So when you look at this gentleman, you look at his build, he's a solid point guard already. He's in his natural position. But at 5'8", I project that this kid may grow to be about 6'2", 6'3", already in his natural position as a point guard. He's a stud at the point. Heady, put twice in already this season. He put a triple-double up. So the kid, when you watch him play, this is an eighth grader out of Connecticut that can basically lead a national powerhouse right now. He can basically start on a national powerhouse team, whether it be leading them or being as a backup guard. He can be involved in a powerhouse team now. So next year, as he continues to develop physically, his talents are already there once his physical development goes. He's good in 4 years. J.C. Martin is the name. 4 years from now, we can have this conversation talking about which major college he's going to go to. On the other side of that, J.C. Martin may be the number one kid in New England. Then you're talking about the number one kid in New Jersey. On the other side of that, his name is Nate Pierre-Lewis. Another kid, he's an in-between guard. He's a combo guard, trying to develop him to be a point guard, left-handed. Stands right now about 6 feet, 6'1". Father played at Wagner College. Franz Pierre-Lewis stands about 6'7", was a monster, was a physical powerhouse. Nate, you know, when you look at him, you look at his development, you can see that already at 6'1", that he may grow to be about 6'4", 6'5". They're training him right now to be a point guard, although his motor is to score, and he can score quick. But when you look at him, he's good in 4 years, because if he grows to be 6'4", 6'5", he's already established himself to know how to handle pressure and handle the ball. But he could also be a scorer as well, so he could be a power two guard. Then you got
Rick,
I can go on for days of this. So you interrupt me, Ted.
No, go ahead. I was going to ask you something. So that's all the good stories, the positives. What are these kids, and if there's kids listening out there, what do these kids need to worry about or avoid in order to, you know, not let their potential get away from them? Because you hear about these stories about the kids that are talented in the 7th grade and 8th grade and 9th grade, and just never comes together for them. So what's a couple words of wisdom you can give us about
the
kids out there?
Well,
with these kids, I bring them in from all over. I have kids coming from D.C., all these kids come from all over to play in my program to get exposure. And the one thing that we do that separates ourselves from any program, we have a preseason portion of it that does training and development. We train them, but a lot of the times what we do is we're in a room and we're just talking with them. So it's a big brother type of talk between my staff and these young men. And we're just talking to them about our experiences and the things that some of them may go through. A handful of guys like myself, I played Division I ball. I was All-American. So some of these guys that on my staff have played ball at a high level. And we're sharing experiences, and we're talking to them about always don't rely on your skills now. Be careful of the people who align themselves with you, who pretend to be good. So there's some big, bad wolves in this game. And you got to be able to trust your parents. And kind of strengthening the parents to kind of be leaders, and they strengthening them with the information that they need so they can help their kids navigate through there. So it's a lot of steps that's involved in the process. I know school is always important in it as well, but we could probably stay here for a long time to kind of list those things. That's just a small snippet.
All right. No, that's good. I like that. That's positive influences, because there's a lot of people out there that are negative influences and just want to ride, you know, the coattails, hoping that these kids become college stars and then eventually pro stars. So good for you.
Hey, Rick, before we talk about the Knicks smacking up your Nets tonight, Rick, hopefully Melo's playing.
I know that's coming. I know we got a few minutes. I know that's coming. So
right. Hopefully Melo's going to play. But I want to ask you this, man. You told me, and I know off air, you've been doing some coaching. So why don't you tell us where you've been coaching and who you're coaching?
You know what? Coaching and that's kind of going back. Like I've always kind of like, for my play, when I play ball, I always felt like I knew the answer sometime, and I didn't always agree with my coach. But I think as I started to kind of be involved with these kids and mentoring them, I found myself, and in life, as you grow, you become a coach. Father, all that stuff goes into coaching. But it's a matter of when this coaching game is like a chess game, and it has such an addiction to it. If you really get into it, it's like you got to be able to make on-the-spot adjustments. And I found myself really get deeper into it and challenging myself with it. This summer, last summer, I started coaching in the Pro League. So I had NBA guys on my team, and I started coaching. And way before that, I had my own program. As I was starting to get my program in with adult stuff, I kind of put my own team together. It was a touring team that I was coaching and playing. So I always had my little hand in coaching, but I think I started to become more serious about it. So this season, I put my high school team. We're in the PSAL. We're playing a high school schedule. We're traveling around. So this is now my first taste of serious coaching. Like,
and what's the name of the team? What school is it?
Liberation Diploma Plus High School. It's a trend. They used to call them alternative schools here in New York. They, they got away from that term. So it's transfer schools, second chance kids. That's the reason why I like it. I'm giving kids a second chance. I'm using basketball to kind of motivate these kids that school is a vehicle that you have to take advantage of. And I put all the carrots out there. I show them in my office. They see the people I connect with. So I'm giving them jobs. I help them out get these kids jobs. Because some of these kids, man, they just get lost in the shuffle of the bigger schools, and they just need somebody that can care about them and give them a second chance opportunity. And that's what it's about.
Good for you. Well, let's transition to the pros. Tell us quickly about this whole Brooke Lopez thing
with the
barbershop.
Man. I took Brooke to the barbershop, got him a haircut. I told my guys, man, I said, I need a part two. It's time to take Brooke to the massage parlor. It's time to take him to the foot massage parlor with some young ladies from Center.
You go hook him up, man.
But yeah, so you're all about Brooklyn. So what do you think about your Brooklyn Nets?
Hey, listen, you know I'm at work and I'm getting ambushed right now with kids. Go down. So our Brooklyn Nets, we're gonna get a W tonight. I want to let you know that he's complete.
Okay.
We're going to get a W tonight. The Knicks are in trouble. I know they laced the Melo up tonight from his injury, but I don't think it's going to help tonight. The rhythm is going to be slightly off. We're going to take advantage. We just come off a two-game losing streak. A hat trick is not an option. So we know.
All right.
Even away game's a home game.
Well, listen, the clock is up against us, man, so give us the information where people can get tickets and check out your tournament at the Barclays Center.
Well, this Sunday, right after the Nets Sixers game, if you have a ticket to the Nets Sixers game this Sunday, you invite us to stay behind right after the game. You're going to see some of the best middle school talent that you ever see. If not, make sure that you get a ticket. You can get one from me, funk48.com. You'll see some stories there that point you in the direction where you can get tickets online through PayPal. If not, you can call me directly, 718-306-9396 or 347-526-6630. Give me a buzz. I got a limited number of tickets to get you in the building this Sunday for both games, a 2-for-1, and it's Sunday night. Merry Christmas.
That's great stuff, man. Thanks for calling,
great
Rick.
Stuff. Thanks
keep
for
it up.
Calling in.
Go ahead,
keep up the good work.
Ray and Tay, let's go. Ray and Tay, let's work.
Ray and Tay, send out them tweets, Rick.
No doubt, I got you.
All right, peace, man. Oh, that's great. Had some technical difficulties. I got kicked off the line for a minute. But great show.
All right, the show goes on. So we had a great time.
Yeah, the show
Ray
goes on.
Today.
I don't even know what happened. I just got the boot. It was crazy. So.
See you on Friday.
But, yeah, man, that was great. That was great. So we'll be back Friday and enjoy the game. Right.
Peace.
The military-industrial complex has taken over the country along with the Wall Street gang.
If you look also at the people that Obama has put on his appointments list, it's all Wall Street, government of Wall Street, by Wall Street, and for Wall Street. There's nobody from heavy industry. There's nobody from the auto sector. Nobody from Silicon Valley. Nobody from big oil. Nobody from defense. No labor. No women. No retirees. No small business. Nothing. It's pure Wall Street. The only people who have a voice in Obama's council are Wall Street finance oligarchs.
G-I-M-E. This is meant to enslave, meant to kill all the brave men.
Woo!
So listen up because you better behave, men. Cause right now we're dealing with killer cavemen. So listen to me cause your freedom is fading. I said your freedom is fading.